Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
And now, Tim Dillon is going to hell.
Welcome to Tim Dillon's Going to Hell, everybody. We are not live. It is Tim Dillon. We should live stream these on YouTube. We're going to start thinking about that. You do get, when I'm in New York City, you do get, if you're a member, well, not even if you're a member, anyone can now go to gasdigitalnetwork.com and we stream the show live. You can watch it there in standard def. But if you want high def, you got to pay. That's Luis Gomez's sales model.
You know,
he's like, if standard def for the people at Gas Digital, if you really want to experience us, you really want to see the craters in people's faces, you want to get an up close look at the psoriasis, oily hair, you know, bags under people's eyes, mm-hmm. You know, you gotta spring for the money, spring for the membership. Get the fucking high def. But it's another non-video episode, which we're also going to correct, because I'm in L.A. a lot now. I still live in New York, technically, although people do not believe that. It would be hard for me to prove that in a court of law, even though I do pay rent and live in New York. But I'm here a lot now. I'm here again on the show with Ben, who's producing the show. He produces all the Instagram videos. He cuts together all that footage. He edits them. And Devin's a friend of ours. Devin also helps out making those videos. We're going to make a lot more of them. If you guys like those videos, they're fun. They're minute.
The best.
They're fun. They're fucking, you know, aggressive. Mm-hmm. And, you know, would any network ever let us do this?
You know, I don't think so. For would, now.
Here's what I think, though. And am I totally wrong on this? I think 15 years ago, you could have gotten away with a lot of that.
Yeah.
Like, I think we've gone backwards
yeah.
with what you can get away with now. Mm. I think you, like, dude, if you watch Reno 911, which was, like, one of my favorite shows, if you watch that and you see what they got away with on that fucking show, and that was not that long ago. No. Look up when Reno 911 premiered. I want to say 2005?
Yeah.
No, maybe
2003, maybe.
2003, maybe I'm...
July 23rd, 2003.
Yeah. It's not that long ago, and it ran through, what, 2007 or something?
Till 2009.
Yeah, that show. Dude, were you a fan of that show?
Yeah, yeah.
I was a huge fan of that show, and there was a lot of great comics on the show.
Oh, yeah. Nick Swardson had a great...
Nick Swardson was great. Yeah. Fucking... And that, all the cast members, Thomas Lent, they were all... Wendy McClendon-Covey, they're all fucking great. Mm-hmm. Kerry Kinney, all of them. But then you also... You know, Patton Oswalt was on the show. You had Moshe Kasher's wife. Why am I blanking?
Natasha Leggero.
Natasha Leggero was on the show. There was a lot of people that would do guest characters on the show. But it was a very funny fucking show. Mm-hmm. But dude, if you watch some of that and you were like, oh, it's on Comedy Central. And now to imagine that some of the jokes,
oh, they're no,
you would never get on.
Mm-mm. I mean, when did Kimmel do blackface? When did Sarah Silverman do blackface?
I don't know.
2006?
I mean, yeah.
I mean, and that was on fucking ABC.
Really?
Jimmy Kimmel was on ABC at the time, right? Wasn't it on, yeah, wasn't it on his show?
Did he do blackface on ABC?
He was dressed as Shaq. He had a bald cap and he was...
Oh, on ABC.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, it is like... what's interesting is like it's been coming for a long time. Mm-hmm. But it's actually, when you look at how quickly things have gotten so tight, it's really not that long.
No.
We've not... Like, the increase in sensitivity has not been that long. But it's been so, like, consuming that it feels like that. Mm-hmm. But when you go back 5 years ago, even 3 years ago, it's certain that, like, you can find things where you're like, oh, today that would be a problem. Mm-hmm. And some of those things are legit, whatever. Certain words people can't, you know,
right.
get away with or just aren't as funny anymore, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. for a while, gay guys, like, people used to just make fun of gay guys in comedy clubs, like the gay voice.
Right.
That was like a thing comedians did. So if you were out at a comedy club, a comedian would get on stage and be like, oh my God, and just making fun of the gay voice. And then that got hacky. Yeah. And it just became not funny because people were like, oh, this is just clearly targeting a group of people without a lot of humor. If it was done well, I think still if it's done well,
right,
and it's funny, like Greg Giraldo has a bit about a certain level of gay being a choice. And he, I forget what he said, but it's a flight attendant like, ah, or something.
Right.
But it's like gay guys were a punching bag for comics for a while. So that's why gay guys
right.
don't really like or they like female comics, mm-hmm. but they don't like, they're not big fans of comedy. But like, I'm out here pitching a show this week, and I think these meetings are good. I don't know. What do I know? They seem receptive. They seem to be into it. But I'm also like, are they going to Google me? None of them have like, like some of them know who I am. But some of them, you get the feeling that none of them have Googled me.
Right. Like, when, no one brings up the videos?
No. No one started the meeting by saying, I thought it was really funny that you said Meghan McCain wanted to fuck her father's corpse. Nobody started that meeting. Or like, we really thought you were funny when you were on Fox News for 2 years on Red Eye. We thought that was really great when you said, you know, Trump wasn't wrong about everything. You had a few points. We really enjoyed that. So tell us, what's the show about? No one's really...
Yeah. Yeah.
No one's really gone that route. I think people are just... They bring you in. I'm a comedian, and they, you know that, and they probably are familiar with some of the stuff I've done. And mm-hmm. They've probably seen a video or two. Here's the thing, man. Why can't, in a mature country, we say Meghan McCain wants to fuck her dad's corpse? Why can't we have fun with that? She's a public figure. Mm-hmm. She's wealthy. Why can't we make jokes about Michael Jackson, you know, fucking bitches, which right. is another video we did. Where are the bitches? But again, you would never see that now on an SNL, and that saddens me because I think that would be fucking hilarious. I think it would be hilarious if that was somebody's take on SNL. But then you look at some of the things that get groans on SNL now, and you're like, who the fuck is in that audience? Like, who are these? And then you realize it's young professional liberals. Who are the most annoying people? I rather communists, and I get a lot of them a lot of these people are angry at me because I said Maduro in Venezuela is probably not a good guy. I don't think anyone's a good guy, by the way. And I didn't advocate regime change. Like, people are like, you advocated regime change in Venezuela. I don't advocate any. It's a podcast, you right. fucking clown. I didn't advocate anything. Me and Mike Racine, the first thing we said about Venezuela is we don't know what the fuck's going on. What do I know? Right. I'm not on the ground in Caracas fucking interviewing people. I don't trust the government. The second thing I said on the podcast was, yeah, Maduro's not a good guy. I'm not a communist, and I don't believe in totalitarian systems of government. That being said, I don't trust the U.S. government to tell me anything and justify an invasion. This is what I say on the podcast. And then people send me these long messages. They're like, you're a deep state tool. You're a propagandist and a deep state Zionist shill. A Zionist shill? I have two pairs of jeans. I own two, literally. One that I like wearing because it's stretchy and elastic. And then the other pair, which I have to wear when I've worn the stretchy pair that I like enough.
Right.
So if I'm a Zionist deep state shill with two pairs of pants, I live in a room with a roommate in New York City.
Yeah.
It's in Queens, in Astoria, Queens. So if this is the deep state shill, if I'm the puppet master, like if I'm one of the puppets and I'm being like,
right.
dude, fucking
we're
God.
In trouble.
We're in real trouble.
Yeah.
But it's just so funny how personally people take. There was this guy that used to listen to the show. It was like a nice guy, good-looking guy, had a girlfriend, seemed like a normal guy. He would message me on fucking, it sounds like I'm lighting a cigarette, but I'm not. and he would message me every now and then, and you know, whatever, fun, you know, and I would message him back. And sometimes I message somebody back. You don't see all the mess. Sometimes I don't have the time. So if you send me a message, I always appreciate it. Thank you. I read it. Sometimes I can respond back. Sometimes I can't. But this, you know, this guy, sometimes I'd respond to him. He got so mad that he's like, hey, Tim, equating the far left and the far right, it will never be funny. It'll never be funny at you and Rizzi. And I was like, he's so personally offended that he probably liked the show. He probably listened to it every fucking week. And he liked the show. And he felt like he was my friend or something. He right. felt like, yeah. you know, whatever. And then I said something that he didn't agree with. And he got mad because it was like a guy that he knew or he thought he knew betraying him. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, because I noticed the striking similarity between a lot of positions of people on the far left and the far right have. That's just factual. Right. There are factual overlaps of those two. Both don't like American militarism. Both are usually not supporters of Israel. Both are not huge fans of capitalism. These are facts. I'm not saying that they're line by line 100%. I'm not saying that. But he's like, that'll never be funny. And he's like, then he said something like, you and Racine both have an eighth grade education or something. That's probably true. Probably true. Okay. Sure. I didn't do anything past eighth grade that was really noteworthy in academia. I hope this guy's a fucking Rhodes Scholar if he's fucking criticizing me. But, you know, he's basically, you know, trashing me because he's like hurt.
Yeah, he loves you.
I think the guy was hurt, you know, and so I go back at him. I forgot what I said to him. He blocked me.
Was this the thing you posted on Instagram?
No, that guy didn't respond to you. That guy I thought was kind of funny. That's a guy deep because he. I love when the Irish get abused.
Yeah.
So if you're gonna abuse me and you shit on the Irish, I'm not mad. I'm not mad at any abuse I get. By the way, I'm never gonna be upset at the abuse. The only reason I'll block people is if I find them hacky or if they attack someone that I know on my page.
Right.
I kind of block them. You can kind of say whatever you want about me. Like, there's this one guy that every week sends me a message, you are obese. I think it's hilarious. I think it's funny. I don't know what. I think it's fun. Like, I don't block him.
Yeah.
I don't care.
Right.
It's.
He's consistent with the bit.
It's just every week. It every now and then he'll switch it up and he'll put something else in, but he always leaves obese. As the, which is a funny word. It obese just is just funny. A funny word. I can't find the messages this kid sent, but it's really just, he blocked me. He right away blocked me because I responded to him and I was like, listen, you fucking whatever. I was like fucking upset and I shouldn't have done that, you know. Mm-hmm. But it was just one of those things where it's like, it is interesting people that get offended at something someone said on a podcast. And then feel the need to rattle off a few paragraphs to them. Have you ever done that? Would you ever do that?
No. They have to be, you know, when I was a kid and they were like next level famous. But I would never send anything personally to them. You know, I just talk to my friends and say I'm done with them or I hate them now, you know.
Right.
But not. I don't understand, you know, how he listens to you consistently and then one thing makes it all crumble. You know, like that mentality, like you're already with him.
Yeah.
He's already with you. He listens all
the time. He got mad. He got mad. He was angry.
Like you're influencing, you know, Venezuela.
Yeah, like I'm a fucking factor in the fucking national debate about what to do in Venezuela. You know what I mean? Like he's like, I can't believe Tim with all his power is advocating regime change. First of all, to use the word advocating, like I am advocating anything, is so funny to me. He's like, you're advocating. He's like, it's almost like that's irresponsible. A man with your stature, a man with your reach right. and platform, a man who dressed up in a dress and said that he was Meghan McCain and she would only fuck her father. How dare you, a man that people look to for guidance, a man who people clearly go to your fucking page and listen to this podcast to have you figure the world out for them. I mean, how dare you irresponsibly tar the leader of Venezuela You know?
You have three stains on your shirt right now.
Three? All from baked beans at a great diner, at Astro Diner.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, so anybody out there, and this is just an aside, we're not going to do this whole episode, but like anybody out there that's really upset about something that I said, this is what I seriously suggest that you do. And I don't. Get a drug addiction. You know what I mean? Like, I was an addict for years. I could not have cared less what anyone said, even if I respected them.
Right.
You have so much time on your hands. It could be filled, like everyone else in this country, sitting on a couch and scratching your skin off. You know? Like, a lot of, you know?
Yeah.
People are doing Roxy's and Oxy. I mean, listen. Go get a drug addiction. Not forever. Go give it a shot. You got too much riding on what fucking some guy says on a podcast you don't even know. Grow up. Nobody cares. It's not a big deal. Mm-hmm. No one cares what you think. This is what I understood when I was a kid. I was like, no one cares what I, like the government. I don't mean no one. I mean like the people that run the show. Don't care what you think about anything.
Right.
Now, most people don't want to live in that world. They want to live in this pretend world. They're like, well, I vote, and I go on Twitter, and I argue, and I pay my taxes, and I've got shut the fuck up. Shut up. No one cares. They're either going to go into Venezuela or they're not. And it's not going to be because of anything that you fucking said or thought or posted or fucking, you had no clue. You have no power. You know what I mean? You have nothing. Yeah. Unless you're somebody who's listening to this podcast and you're like, you have a shitload of money and even if you're one of those people, you're still a cog in a machine. It's just a bigger machine, mm-hmm. and you have more money, more power, more leverage, per se. Mm-hmm. But everybody's acting like their opinions are so, and I got to be well-researched and I'm responsible because I don't want to say something where I could be wrong, but right. Be wrong.
Right.
No one cares. Be right. Be so right and see what that does for you. Be one of the people that were like, yeah, the Iraq war, no good. That's probably going to end badly. Be one of those people. No one listened to those people. No one cared. So that's the thing now where it's like, it is what it is and just fucking, and that's the problem. You can't have any fun anymore. Can't have any fun.
Yeah.
I mean, but I'm pitching that show, and you know, you go into these rooms with these people and these these executives, and like, you know, these people are
sounds like it's gonna be racist, but it's about
it's not. Listen, it's
these people
in Hollywood. who are live on the coast. I'm kidding. I'm satirizing mm-hmm. a racist.
Mm-hmm.
That's what a racist would say. No, but I literally mean, listen, anybody that works as an executive in these companies, it has nothing to do with their religion or their race or anything like that. It's a specific type of person. It's generally a specific type of person. Just like the same people, they're agents or managers, they're a specific type of person. Generally a person who Goldman Sachs said after their internship that, no, we don't have any positions for you. You have to go back to your parents' house. And the tech startup goes, we're good. So they go, well, I like SNL after parties and I like offices and I want to be. So that's what they do. They get into being. But then there's some really good people and really creative and smart people that have made a lot of cool shit. I've not met any of them personally. You know, I haven't. None of them have ever wanted to work with me. They've never been interested in ever doing anything with me. So I'm swimming around in the pool of people that are willing to spend a day with me, and they're good, mm-hmm. and they're solid, and some of them are impressive, you know, but they're not these names that you'd hear of because those guys are working with the Amy Schumers and the people that are fucking, you know.
Right.
But I'm pitching a show, which is my life, which is when I was, a closeted, drunk, cocaine addict, selling mortgages in 2009 after the financial crisis. I had a house, and this is all true. I had a $600,000 house I bought with 106% financing, meaning that there was no down payment. I financed 100% of the transaction and then 6% for closing costs and things like that, you know? Mm-hmm. And you can't do that anymore. I took it with a subprime mortgage, no income, no asset loan. I had no income and no assets, but I had a good credit score. And I was able to show some money in the bank, and a bank handed me $620,000. Hey, it was 2007. I bought the house. It is what it is. And the whole show is about just the disaster of that, you know, my fucking entire tragic life, mm-hmm. you know? And it's a lot of tragedy in the pitch. Because it's not tragic where it's like, I was born with cancer and I can already anticipate people being like, you were a white man and you had a house that it wasn't tragic. It was your privilege. And it's like, no, you're right. To an extent, you're right. You know, all these people that are like, oh, they're victims in the mortgage crisis. It's like they're victim. If somebody handed them $100,000 they never should have had out of their house. Somebody gave them, they cashed out of some fucking house inherited or never should have owned, gave them $100,000. It's like, yeah, and then they couldn't pay it back and their credit went to shit. And I'm not saying that does suck. And if you have kids involved, whatever sucks. But when you look at historically the word victim, what's been done to people, the Catholic Inquisition were put on a rack. You know what I mean? And people were tortured. You talk about victims. And it's like this time in history, like a victim meant someone loaned you too much money. You know what I mean? Like this is one of the only times in history.
Right.
A victim meant a bank gave you too much money that you shouldn't have had.
Right.
That's a victim.
You get to have a little fun as the victim.
Yeah. You're a victim because you didn't know that on the dishwasher's salary, you shouldn't be buying a $750,000 house. Because no one had explained to you the basic laws of logic and math. Everyone's like, it was trickery. All these people were duped. And it's like, yeah, was there predatory lending? Was there bad shit going on? Sure. But there was a lot of people and a lot of people don't understand about the mortgage crisis. It wasn't just subprime. Subprime meant that you had terrible credit, okay? And you got, you know, a loan you were able to, like, state your income. You didn't have to prove any of your income. So you could just say, yeah, I do this, and I make this, and you go, okay. And you didn't have good credit, and you got this adjustable loan, meaning that you got a low rate for 2 or 3 years, and then it would adjust. And then when the adjustment came, you would just refinance again into another loan. Mm. Now, the problem was your house kept going up in value. So every time you'd refinance, you had the equity to refinance. You had the equity to take another mortgage out. Then when the mortgage crash happened, the houses stopped going up. So there was no more equity. You couldn't keep tapping your house and using it like an ATM. So then you had a bunch of people in adjustable rate mortgages, which I took out myself. I had an adjustable rate. And my rate never adjusted. My house started foreclosing before that. I didn't even get to the point where it fucking ballooned. I didn't even get to the balloon payment. I was done before that, you know? But if those rates had been fixed rates, a lot of people would be able to keep their house. But a lot of it wasn't subprime. A lot of it was like something called Alt-A, which people don't know what Alt-A means. Alt-A means your credit's good, and we're going to lend you money. And a lot of the Alt-A loans were people that wanted to buy investment properties, or they wanted to buy second homes. They wanted to be Donald Trump, which, you know, I mean, you know, how is Donald Trump Donald Trump? It's a great question. But, like, they wanted to be a real estate mogul. They wanted to buy a house and let the house rent out, you know, rent out the house, and it would pay for itself. Mm-hmm. Because mortgage rates were so low, your mortgage was so low, that if you bought renters in, it would essentially pay your mortgage. So now you have an asset that you've bought, no money out of, or very little money out of pocket. People come in and just pay your mortgage. And so everybody was like, oh, I'm going to be a real estate, you know, we're gonna own. And I mean, dirtbags. Mm-hmm. I mean, dirtbags would walk into this office and be like, I own 3 houses, one for each of my kids. And they would act like they were fucking Warren Buffett, and they'd figured something out. It was like, you didn't figure anything out. You you figured out that you could take sham loans and buy a bunch of properties, and that's what it is. But this whole idea that it's just people that got, and I'm one of the buyers. I bought a fucking house. I'm telling you, the idea that it was just a bunch of people who got duped and who had no idea could not be further from the truth. We live in a country of dishonest scoundrels, okay? These are scoundrels who live in this country that will steal if they can get away with it. And that's my favorite thing about the people in this country. And it's the most American thing about them is they don't like the government, and they'll fuck over and they'll cheat on their taxes and they'll pay cash for shit and they'll every now and then help their buddies out. And I love all. I don't have a problem with any of that. But the idea, then you're going to turn this crew into a bunch of choir boys that were completely bamboozled by these. Do you know how many calls people would call me and they're like, "What? Hey, I need a, what can we do here? Can we? We feel, I got my brother will say that I work at his Chevy dealership." They were pitching me fraud ideas. I'm like, we really can't get away with that stuff anymore. They're like, "What if I put my mother on the loan? She's about 4 months from death. But we can get her to, sign." I mean, I remember doing a loan for a guy. Oh God, I'm never getting on TV telling these fucking stories. I did a loan. Every time it sounds like I'm lighting a cigarette, I'm eating a pear. I did a loan for a guy in Brooklyn, in Sunnyside, Brooklyn, and a guy came to me. He goes, "Listen," he goes, "here's the deal." He goes, "Listen, I want to open up a strip club in Miami." I said, "Great." He goes, "I've never worked and I have no money." I said, "Hey, what am I, God? I don't, you know, you want to open up?" He goes, "I think I'd be great in the business. I go down to Miami. I like strip club business. My friends, I need money out of my father's house. My father is an older man who may or may not have dementia." This is the words that he used to me. He, swear to God. He goes, he goes, he made a gesture with his hand. He said, "My father's a little, you know," and I'm like, hey. But he goes, "The reality is, my father, I'll never be able to buy this house for my father. I have no credit. I have nothing." So he goes, "We need to refinance. I need to take some cash out of the house." Okay? And so, you know, we did the loan for the guy. It's completely legal. It's above board. He's like, "I want to take this money." And it is what it is. He's like, "We're going to pay the mortgage. I'm going to go down and open a strip club in Miami." I mean, what am I, you know, hey, I'm not lending my money. It's a bank said right. They want to get involved. Now, we didn't write in the application, "This guy, Epifanio, wants to go down to Miami and do the strip club." We just said they're going to take money out of the house. I don't know why, for home improvement. No one cared, you know? Now, during the closing, it was a little uncomfortable. I had never met the father, okay? This guy sent in all the documents. I had never met the father. We get there. The father is essentially dead. We get to the closing. We show up to the closing, okay? The closing attorney's there, and the closing attorney's like, "Have you met the borrower?" I'm like, "No, I spoke to the son." She goes, I'm kind of uncomfortable with this because the guy, he seems like ill. I'm like, "What do you mean he seems ill?" She goes, "He just doesn't seem like he's, you know." So I go in there, and the father is sitting at the table. The father clearly has no idea where he is. He's very, very old, and he's out of it, right? So Epifanio's sitting there, and he's like screaming in his father's face. He goes, "Dad, the men from the bank are here." Father's expressionless, sitting at the table, right? I go, "Hello, sir. How are you? I'm blank blank from the bank." And again, expressionless, doesn't look at me. Total Weekend at Bernie's. So I'm like, we're here. So they take out these papers. The son is like helping the father sign his name. And the closing attorney's like, I don't know. And I'm like, the man is an elderly man. His son is, you know, he's helping out. What are we? The judge and jury? You fucking, you know? And in the middle of the thing, like the father would kind of have like a collective father would be like, what is happening? And then his son would look at him and go, "Daddy, keep signing. It's almost over. It's almost over, Daddy." Wow. So looking back at that, who's the victim? The dude's about to die. The guy's dead. The father's literally dead. I'm trying to find the victim. Now, this is when I get in these conversations. People look at me like I'm a lunatic. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
People look at me like I'm wrong. But let's... And don't hit me with the victim is the taxpayers. If you message me that, I'll block you. If you message me the victim is the taxpayers of the bill, I will block you, you dumb fuck. This old guy's dead. He doesn't know what's even happening. He's not leaving the house. He's gone. He's going to wherever.
Right.
This is the only chance the son has to suck any money out of this fucking house.
Yeah.
The son, so we're going to try to find the victim here. The son is sending all the documents. They got approved. The son had a job, you know. I guess the bank, you want to say the bank is, well, the bank is not doing their due diligence. The bank allowed this loan to happen. And the bank, you know, so I'm not saying every situation is like this. Some people got screwed out of their houses by shady brokers, which sucked. Mm-hmm. Okay. But this guy, you know, he wasn't long for this world, or he was going into a home or an institution or whatever.
Right.
And the son was like, "I got to take money out of this house now, and I got to run. I got to take the money and run," which is probably what was going on. These types of things happen more frequently than you would imagine. People saw an opportunity to take a bag of fucking money. That's what they were able to do. They saw an opportunity to take a fucking bag of money, okay? Mm-hmm. And, you know, it doesn't mean, I'm not justifying some of the crazy shit that went down, but I'm just saying, in my own case, when somebody came to me when I was 23 years old, coked out of my face, dancing in a nightclub called Mirage with some curvy fucking Italian broad in Long Island, and somebody's like, "Bro, you should buy a fucking house, dude." And I was like, yeah, I'm gonna. And I did. Am I the victim? Am I the victim in that situation that I bought a $600,000 house with no income and rented it out?
I think you're the customer.
I don't know what I am, but the reality is, like, the term victim, we love that word. And there are real victims. There are old people that didn't understand anything, who had their houses taken from them and shit like that. But I think there's a lot of people out there that just saw an opportunity to take the money. That's what the fucking bankers were doing. You know, the problem when you criticize, like, people's like, yeah, these fuckers on Wall Street made a lot of money, and they made more money. But you got to realize, the guy on Main Street who was taking money that he knew he couldn't pay back, they're essentially doing the same thing. They're taking things that they shouldn't have, that don't belong to them. And, you know, that's what it is. So my whole thing is, like, when I'm telling this story, and I'm not, the pitch does not involve the story I just told, but it's not a part of the pitch, not a formal part of the pitch. But when I tell the story to a room of, in many cases, good looking young executives who all went to college, and I'm talking about being drunk and hanging out in a bar called Lisa's Lounge, where the owner of the bar named it after his daughter who died in a drunk driving accident, and her picture was on literally on the bar, on the wall above the bar, and we would all toast to her and go, "Lisa." And the bartender, Tracy, would say to us, you know, one day we were there, it's 2 p.m., somebody said something, and Tracy was like, "What? It's fucking Easter?" And we all looked, and Tracy goes, "I guess I should have gotten my kids baskets." And then she goes, "Well, that's why they live with their father." And we all laughed. So when you're telling stories like that, these executives, they're kind of amused, but at the same time, they're kind of disturbed. Mm-hmm. You know? And I want to tell them, I want to say this to them. I want to say, do you realize if you guys had been in some of these situations, if you had met some of these people, if you had been in some of these fucking nightmares, everything you do wouldn't suck as much. You know?
Right.
There's a reason that everything out there right now, not everything, but a large, because you people are making stuff for your friends.
Yes.
You're making shit for other people who have the same sensibility as you yep. and have the same life experiences as you. And it's fucking, it sucks. Mm-hmm. It's not good. Mm-hmm. Every time somebody tells me something's great, I watch it. I'm like, it's fine. Mm-hmm. Maybe best case, it's fine. But it's interesting because you see a lot of people that are like making this, and some of them are great. Like some of these people, you talk to the guys at FX, you're like, you guys are fucking smart. You make some of the best TV that's ever fucking happened. And I totally understand why. Because you ask great questions. You're fucking in. You're 100% present. You're fucking great, you know? Mm-hmm. And then you meet some other people and they're less so. But like, yeah, I think a lot of it comes down to the fact that like, why does SNL suck? Because nobody in the SNL writers room, or very few of them, if any of them, have taken a public bus.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The same fucking schools, mm-hmm. the same shit, the same opinions, and comedy. Dude, everything sucks if you put what makes doing these. Like, we all have different experiences in our life, and that's why I think we're all funny. And when we hang out, we're all funny because, like, we were talking about you in high school. You were fat, mm-hmm. and people didn't like you. And in high school, I was not as fat, and everyone loved me.
Yeah.
And it's those differences in our lives, you know what I mean, are important. They're important. And that those are the types of things that make us funny.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Suffering. Being on the bus would make the show, you know.
Yeah.
Some broaden your horizons.
Yeah.
Deal with some suffering.
Deal with some shit.
Yeah.
You were talking about your thing. Your mom went to New Mexico for a year.
Yeah. Weird marriage, you know, to a very quirky man. That'll do it to you.
I love how you just say quirky.
Just, you know, guy that's obsessed with movies and, you know.
What torpedoed the marriage?
He had an affair with an Armenian real estate agent that was his student.
Hot.
Yeah. No, I saw them too one time.
Fucking?
No, just driving. Just driving by me when I was after school, they just happened to be driving by, and I was like, "That's not my mom."
Wow.
Yeah.
Did you know what was going on immediately?
He had just said he had a friend that he was helping at school.
Did you go home and jack it?
Yeah, I did. I thought about it. It was pretty hot, actually. Yeah.
Hot is so fucking hot.
Yeah.
I always wonder if my dad ever had an affair. I don't know.
Nice.
I'm scared to find out that he didn't. You know what I mean? I'm scared to find out he was a loser. I just couldn't. This guy's a musician for 20 years. I'm like, you couldn't get your dick sucked on a Saturday night.
It was weird. I actually did think, like, oh, my dad's kind of cool, maybe? I don't.
Well, it was interesting. So when the affair came out, what happened? Like, how old were you?
I was 16, 17.
And he didn't move out of the house.
No, he just, he slept in his car. Like, he just kind of made a. He tried to make like a scene about it, you know, like, woe is me. Like what are you going to do?
He's the victim.
Yeah. Yep.
He's the victim.
Played the victim.
There it is.
Yep. I would go to school for like the first 2 weeks after, and he would just be sleeping in his back seat on the street. I'd be like, that's my dad. All right.
Pop.
I don't know what's going on.
And then mom went, and where did she? She went to go live in an old missile silo in New Mexico and fucking take acid and fucking howl at the moon. This is
eventually
great.
She did. Yeah. No, my dad turned then just because he kept saying he didn't have the money to go get a, you know, motel room or even stay with a friend or whatever, you know. I remember this. He tried getting back in the house. Like he let like a month and a half go by where he was just staying out all night, you know, like doing whatever, just trying to be away from my mom. And one night he came back and he was just kind of like, you know, walking around the house and putting things away like it was back to normal. And my mom was like, Daryl, like, no, we're done with this. And he goes, honey, how much longer do I have? He was like,
right.
50.
Right. All right. How much longer? So he's pretending he's dying.
Yeah, pretending he's on, you know, the verge of death. He's a health nut. He's
That's
obsessed
great.
With vitamins.
How
he
much longer do I have?
Day.
Just let me live the rest of my life in peace.
Yes.
Great.
Yes. Yeah.
So why did she bounce?
Because my dad made it real weird and toxic and, like, just turned the basement into his new room. Like he just built, he just had some Mexican guys come over and build a room and a door in the side of our house that was not supposed to be there, and just made this makeshift room. And he was just living under, like, me and my mom,
and
for half a year. And it was just very
weird.
Did
she say goodbye before she left?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It was.
How
like
old were you when she left?
Probably 17. I think the divorce happened when I was 16. It wasn't fine. You know. Yeah, I didn't. I didn't care really. It was just awkward. It was just very strange. You know. I wanted them to get divorced. It was the best thing that ever happened to me. You know, they were horrible together.
Yeah.
It was just annoying. Yeah. But, yeah. And it was
your only child.
Yes.
Yeah. Me too.
Yeah.
Only child. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I always wanted a brother or sister. Never a sister. I really don't respect women. Very few of them. Like big realtors or like Michelle Wolf or like Yamanika or like,
right.
I don't know, that bitch that tortured those people. I think she's a demon, but it's like, it's an interesting story. But, you know, the CIA, the woman in the CIA, I know her name. I'm not going to say her name, but we had a CIA agent come on the show and he talked about her. But then there's the lot of them where I'm like, eh.
Yeah.
No, I'm kidding. But I'm kidding around. That's what makes me funny is that I joke. I'm not even gay. I've never been in the mortgage industry. None of it's true. None of it is true, folks. If you're offended by anything I said, remember this. This is a writer's room. A writer's room meets every day and writes Tim Dillon, and they give me a script. So if I've said anything you don't like, if I've offended you because of my Venezuela comments, it was handed to me by a writer's room of people that all went to Harvard and Yale, and they think this is great satire. It's satire. So if anything you hear rubs you the wrong way, know that this is Ivy League approved satire that I am delivering quite brilliantly all the time for usually free.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I'm doing a performance art piece. I don't exist.
Yeah.
As a human being, I am not a human being. I am a performance art piece.
Yeah.
Here for your enjoyment. You know?
Colin Jost wrote you.
Any of them. Sure. All of them.
Yeah.
They write me. They go, wouldn't it be funny if this guy was gay and had all these crazy opinions? And let's just make him a real demon, but kind of likable. And that's where we're at. We're in season 34 of a show that was written by some of the most talented, all liberals, good liberals. They are concerned with global warming. They want babies, if they upset the mother, to be drowned right after birth. They're and again, so that might offend you. That was written for me. That is not something that I said. This is a script that I memorized and downloaded into my brain. But I always wanted a brother. I always wanted a brother because I think I always wanted to fuck a brother. Like if I had a brother, it was a hot brother. Like I always wanted a hot brother. I never wanted a gross brother.
Right.
I wanted a good-looking brother. It was like a hot brother who was walking around the house all the time naked. I wanted to fuck my pretend brother.
Yeah, yeah.
Listen, again, that's offensive? Okay. Tell the room. Let the room know. Tone it down in there, boys. Tone it down in there, boys and girls. Who have nice lives and all, you know, work real hard. But this is my thing. I always thought that siblings liked each other a lot more than they do. When I went out into the world, I found out that a lot of people, they don't even hate their siblings. They don't care.
It's indifferent.
They don't care either way. They're indifferent. It's kind of interesting to me. I always wanted somebody that I could, like, go through life with.
Right. But it's not like that, really.
It's really not like that for a lot of people. Yeah. For some people, it is. Mm-hmm. For some people, it is, and their brother or sister or whatever is really, really close. And some people, it's just one of those things. Mm-hmm. Did you ever regret being an only child? Because it means our parents are selfish. That's what it means.
Yeah.
Our parents are selfish. They didn't have more children. They didn't care that we had a sibling to hang around and play around with. They wanted to just have one kid and then keep going with whatever important work they were doing.
Yeah.
So did you ever...
Not really, because the siblings that I knew didn't like each other, really. They was always arguing or jealous of each other.
Interesting.
It was like, you know, being younger. I envied it more when I got older and I saw, like, certain, you know, bonds between siblings. But
right.
For the most part, it wasn't that...
Yeah, for the most part, you were just like...
I was just, you know, cool. Yeah. I don't have to share the TV or do anything.
Well, that's why I make close friends, because I think I substitute friends for siblings.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
How long have you kept... Who's your oldest friend?
My oldest friend?
I keep friends for about 24 months. No, literally. I believe... Listen.
They're like a subscription.
I keep friends for about 24 months.
Yeah.
And this is something that I talked to the writer's room about. And I've wanted to extend people's contracts on the show. The writer's room have said, got to keep it moving. Got to keep going. You're on a journey. A lot of these people are not on a journey.
Mm-hmm.
It is what it is. Maybe they can come back for a cameo.
Right.
So I think that 24 months is an appropriate friendship. Who's your oldest friend?
My Korean friend, Arnold. I've known him since second grade.
Arnold.
Arnold Kim.
Arnold Kim.
Arnold Kim. Yep.
Second grade.
Second grade. Went to high school with him. Went through middle school with him. We separated for like fourth and fifth grade. But yeah. Yep.
How often do you speak to him?
Not often now.
Right. So here's what so the reality is you're not really friends.
Yeah. I mean, we'll text about football once a year.
That's not a friendship.
Fan. Yeah.
One of my friends, Michael, my friend Michael tried to explain to me that all straight male friendships were just talking about sports. And then I said, no, you just don't have any friends. You know, he told me, he's like, good straight guys that just talk about sports. I go, no, you don't have any friends. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's not what all straight male friendship should be.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
No.
I mean, am I wrong there?
No, you're not.
I mean, straight male friendships should be guys that relate on a certain level who fuck each other.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's what straight male friendship.
Straight male friendship.
Straight male friendship should be dudes who every now and then fucking have a little fun, and fucking don't get ridiculous about it.
No,
aren't gay,
right?
But realize that there are limits to what women can do for you and what they're willing to do for you. 24. I look at people now. I'm 34. I look at people now with a large group of friends. I think they're mentally unwell. I believe this. I think if you have a large group of friends, you're mentally unwell. Something is wrong with you. Like, I had a woman say to me recently, we're out, and she goes, this is after show, she goes, I have a large social circle. And I said, oh, you're mentally ill. That's all. Are you 16? The fuck do you mean you have? Right. I have a large social circle. You're a psychopath. You should have a few friends. That's it. You should not have a large social circle.
Yeah.
Am I wrong?
No, I don't think you are. Because, I mean, she can't really get deep with anybody because no one really likes her. She's just an acquaintance to everybody, you know? Everyone's an acquaintance, kind
of. What people mean when they say they have a large social circle is they mean there's a group of people in their lives who they can demean and burden.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And that those people, because they have, insecurities of their own, they can't get out of that web.
Right.
So they are stuck listening to this person burden them with their nonsense. It's crazy to make it, you know, Ray Comp, the great Ray Comp, who we're going to have on the show when we're back in New York, who is a very, very good friend of mine, who's been a friend longer than 2 years, but Ray Kump said, he had a great joke. He goes, I don't like to do heroin. I don't want to do heroin, but it's hard to make friends after 30, which is true. It's like, how do you, you know?
Yeah.
If you're doing heroin with somebody, you've got a buddy. Do you make friends now? How old are you, 27?
26. You are the last new friend I've made, you know?
Right.
In comedy. It's just, if you like somebody, you know,
right.
In comedy at this point, I'm not like, you know, making new other friends outside of what I'm doing, you know?
It's hard to make friends after a certain age.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I really believe that. I think it's very tough.
It's just, who has the time to keep, you know, setting aside time for a new person? You already got people.
I think when I hear that there are people that... I've never understood, like when people say to me sometimes, like, I have the same five friends I've had since fifth grade. It's the same five friends that we all had. We all went to camp together, you know, mm-hmm. Then we all went to school, and we've been together forever, and we're all in each other's wedding parties. To me, that's an odd experience to have on this planet.
Mm-hmm.
It's a strange experience to have on this planet, because I believe in my heart that people are to be used and thrown and thrown away. I believe that is the most efficient
right.
way. I believe
to
that.
Exploit.
I believe that you should look at people as marks. And you go, what can I get out of this fucking schmuck before I throw them in the street? So when people say to me that I've had the same friend, I'm like, oh, you're a loser, and they are also losers.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you know.
Yeah. Agree. I agree.
And that becomes an issue, you know. But listen, I'm I don't believe that. I believe that it's a beautiful experience if you have the same friends. I just feel like my interests have shifted too much, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for a large period of my life, and even still to this, in some capacity, my interest has been to destroy myself and every part of me can experience love. Now, when you're hell-bent on doing that, you got to avoid a certain crew. And that crew is a bunch of life-affirming positivity lunatics. By the way, everyone on Instagram that's all positive, I hope to God you hang yourself on Instagram. I hope to God you hang yourself on Instagram, and so that when people look at your page, they can see a motivational quote, and then the next thing they see is your blue face.
With the boomerang effect, you know, right with before the boomerang you're alive, effect. Dead.
Yeah, Instagram, because I'm a little sick of the positivity shit.
Yeah.
Living my best life. If someone says I'm living my best life,
I hate that.
I believe they should be attacked by bats. I'm reading a book about somebody who was attacked by bats. Well, it's not the whole book, but there's a scene where they're attacked by bats. And I want that to happen to people who use the term, I'm living my best life. I'm positive, and I'm giving the world, because these are all sociopaths. They don't care about you.
No.
These Gary Vee knockoffs that are out there telling you how great everything's going to be if you just fucking, you know, whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. They don't care about you, okay? Hey, Jordan Peterson, I understand you got a lot of advice for a lot of young men that fucking can't figure out how to wipe their ass when they're 30. And they're sitting in their fucking house in the suburbs, and they need you to get on stage and talk about, oh, you need to, you know, you have to free your father from the belly of the whale and go and get the gold and bring it back to the village. And
a
bunch
leprechaun.
Of fucking soft suburban faggots can't have a, they don't have a purpose in life. You'd have a purpose in life if you didn't have any food, okay? Go live in a fucking project. Here's my 12 rules for life. All of those men at the Jordan Peterson lecture, go live in a housing project. Okay?
Yeah.
That's what I say.
Go clean that room.
Oh, now you have purpose. You have purpose. Isn't that funny? Isn't it funny how it works? And I think Peterson's a smart guy, and I'm not, you know, but I think just like the idea that there's a bunch of people walking around that just, I just can't, what am I doing? You know, you see the,
right.
You know, Ari Shaffir went to one of the lectures. And I think Peterson's an important guy, and a lot of what he's railing against is shit I think is ridiculous. But this motivational crap, where people are like, you changed my life because before I met you, I didn't realize I had to flush the toilet and I didn't realize I should have a job and I should make money. And I just thought that I'd lay in my bed and jack off and all the cum would get crusty and I'd eat it. And what animals are out there that fucking can't live their fucking life? They need fucking... This is why I prefer Ty Lopez. I prefer these hucksters on Instagram right. that are complete, like, multi-level marketing Amway hucksters who don't even cloak it in this mythological shit. Like, Peterson cloaks it in this, like, mythos and meaning. You need meaning in your life. I'd rather some fuck who's just like, hey, build the brand. You know, here's what you got to do.
Right.
Get the contacts. Do the because it's like, oh, this it's clearly based on nothing. And I like those guys. I like those motivationals, but I don't mind them. Mm-hmm. But the idea that there's such a need for this that people don't fucking have any clue. And these are people that have been raised in nice environments. Not always, but in a lot of cases. They're kids from the suburb. They're bored. And they can't find any purpose. So they need somebody to come in and Gary V. Hey, thanks, Gary. Gary, thanks so much. After listening to your literal nonsense, Gary V had a quote once where he's like, if you deploy, I'm gonna screw it up, but it doesn't matter because the words can get arranged in any way. It's the same horse shit. He's like, if you deploy empathy, gratitude, speed and offense leads to result. It's like, guys, gay guys, it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean anything. Do you realize what he's saying doesn't mean anything? He's not selling anything of value except garbage mm-hmm. that you're swallowing. Did you ever get into any of those guys as motivational guys?
No.
Go get Gary V quotes. Pull up some Gary V quotes. We did a whole episode here on Gary V.
Gary V.
Yeah.
See the guy they quote at the ESPYs and shit? Like they have a Gary V award?
Gary V is like a guy that's like best friends with every billionaire that started a company and just somehow didn't get involved in any of them, but he should have. So now he goes on Instagram and he tells people that are like, 700 pounds that they too can own it. Let's look at some of these. It's easy to dream, but much harder to execute it. Gary Vaynerchuk. People pay money for this. People pay money for this. Ready? Skills are cheap. Passion is priceless. Fear kills growth. Stop hanging around people who don't want to win. How about this? I would agree with that quote if you just ended after people. Stop hanging around people. Stop. Retreat. Go away. Go away. If you live for the weekends and vacations, your shit is broken. Gary Vee. This is a retard.
One of them says, stop focusing on dumb shit. That's it.
Gary Vaynerchuk, there's not a single winner on earth that took it easy. Oh, wrong. I know a lot of people who inherited money who take it very easy. They're always taking it easy. See, I'm throwing some bones to the socialists in the crowd. Okay? Thank you. The writer's room realized many of you were upset at what you perceived was a defense of capitalism. Now we're going the other way. Okay? I'm grinding when you're sleeping, Gary Vaynerchuk. This is a guy that masturbates to torture porn on the dark web. This guy cannot come unless someone is losing consciousness, okay? And is bleeding. The best marketing strategy ever, care.
Ideas are shit. Execution is the game.
That's the real one, right? Ideas are shit.
Ideas are shit.
Ideas are shit. Execution is the game. So this is your guru. Ideas are shit. Execution is the game. Just make it happen. Make what happen? Who cares? Doesn't matter.
Executing what?
Doesn't matter.
Ideas are
but
shit.
But that is the money quote. That's the quote that explains all the
it's
other
everything.
Quotes.
Yeah.
Ideas are shit.
It literally cancels itself
execute,
out.
Hustle, grind. But what? Hustle what? Grind what? Grind, hustle. Stop whining. What should I do? Stop whining. Hustle, grind. But Gary, literally, what do? That's fear, killing growth. You're afraid. No, but I'm asking. I'm literally asking you, what should I do? Start winning. Hanging out with winners. Ha, Gary, how? I have diabetes. Gary, I need an operation. Gary, let me ask you a question. Okay? I don't understand. What am I supposed to do? Okay? The brands that connect with clients in a real way, those are the ones that win. Gary, my mother is sick. I check on her in the night to see if she's still breathing. Okay? Content is king, but marketing is queen. Gary, I'm imprisoned for a crime I didn't commit. Well, content is king. Content is king. Gary, I can't get it, the appeals process. The lawyer is really phoning it in. It's a public defender. I think I may be put to death for this. bet on your strengths. Bet on your strengths. Well, I'm kind of strong because I've been working out in jail for 10 years. You know? But this is what I mean.
Oh, man.
This is what I mean. Jeez. Like, this psychopath, these are the people who are doing really well now. These are the people who are doing great. The people that follow this model of just inundate you with this idea that you need to go out and crush it and kill it. And you're like, what am I crushing? What am I killing?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just so, it's so crazy.
People respond to effort. That's one of them. Passion is contagious. The game is my drug.
Gary,
what game?
Right. Gary, you know what else is contagious? AIDS. AIDS is contagious, Gary. My father died of AIDS. I mean, but this is what I mean. This guy sells nothing to people who buy it. And there are people out there who buy it because they want this idea that, like, they're going to be. I just don't know, dude. I look at who really succeeds right now. You come to LA, these Vine stars, these YouTube stars, really good looking, you know, and they're out there, they're playing with dead people or whatever they're doing. They're fucking throwing eggs at some old lady in the fucking grocery store. They don't have souls. They don't. Let me tell you right now, we've bred the souls out of people. These people do not have soul. But they have content. Content is king.
Yep.
They don't care. No. They make millions and millions of dollars selling this positivity horse shit. It means nothing. Yep. It means nothing. You know? That's what it is, man. It's straight up sociopathy.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that those people in any system, no matter what, these people are always going to be great. They're going to succeed. Those people are going to figure out a way to succeed. But, you know, I mean, it's just because you see them now. You see them sometimes in comedy. Or you see them wherever they are. And they have this kind of...
Remember when The Wolf of Wall Street came out and everyone was upset at, like, it glorifying, like, Jordan Belfort? But it's like most people are kind of him now, just on lower levels, YouTube, Vine, like
they would be him if they had a phone, you know. Jordan Belfort, at least, you know, he had to show up to work in order to rob people. He at least was selling a real fake thing,
right?
You know,
yeah.
But that's where we're at now. That's where we're at in society. We're watching it all happen. So I'm not advocating anything, by the way. I'm just watching it happen.
Right.
I'm just sitting back watching the show. People go, why do you want Hillary Clinton to win? I want Hillary Clinton to win because, like House of Cards, this would be a great fucking thing. If Hillary came back in at the end and all these fucking Democratic candidates couldn't get in and she came in and beat Trump, that would be fucking crazy. And then maybe the world would normalize. Maybe things would be funny again and maybe people would be funny again and, you know. I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe that wouldn't happen. But I think that'd be a great story. There's no wall. Not folks. Anyone that thinks the wall's coming or, you know, you're going to live in some, European Nordic wonderland, you know, because you're fucking living on a couch somewhere and you're angry, you know, and you think like you're going to be a Viking. You know, all these alt-right people think they're going to be like hard-bodied Vikings, you know, where our homeland. Shut the fuck up. America's a European country. Oh, is it? I travel all around America. You know what it is? Bob's Big Boy. That's what it is. It ain't a, there's nothing European about this fucking country, and there never has been, okay? It's people is stuffing an egg substitute into their mouth at Disney World while some fucking person in a costume in 85, 90 degree heat has a skin rash that if they took off their costume in front of your family, you would all start vomiting. they're bleeding and their blisters are bloody. And it's a small world after all. It's a small world. And that's the other thing I want to say before we get out of here. How long have we done?
We're at 1 hour and 3 minutes.
Okay. We'll wrap it up a little bit. But I want to say, have you been to Disney World?
No. Disneyland I have, but not Disney World.
Same shit. Disney World's a lot more impressive, mm-hmm. but there's a group, there's a breed of person now, and I guess always, but now it's who, I think the people that go to Disney World without children should be in jail. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I think if that's your idea of a vacation, because children think Disney World's a magical place. Right. Adults should realize what I said. Oh, these are people dressed in costumes who probably want to kill themselves because it's a horrible, it's horrible. That is a horrible thing. Yeah. That they're walking around in the heat, dressed in a costume, and then, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. But there are these people now that go on Facebook, they're like, we're planning it. We're planning a trip to Disney. It's going to be in September of 2024, but we just want to get some information. So is there any way we can have a 750 comment thread about everyone's experiences at all the hotels and the parks and what passes we should get and all these things? And it's like, number one, you can just go to YouTube. These are the same people that crowdsource everything, like on Facebook. They'll be like, hey, I have a few days off from work. Can anyone tell me where I should go on a vacation? Suggest places. Suggest places. I've never had a thought. I've never had a thought or a feeling or an interest. Hey, I'm looking to start reading some more books. Can anyone suggest books to me? Because I can't, I don't have interests. And I don't have things that excite or interest me. Is there any way somebody could, you know, and this whole thing. Listen, there's a bitch. Pear. There's a bitch. There's a bitch. Don't laugh into the mic, Ben. Jamie doesn't do that. There's a laugh. Okay? There's a laugh. There's not. What was I saying? The crowdsourcing. Yeah, there's a girl on YouTube who goes to all the Disney hotels and reviews them for you. She reviews them. And they're all on tape. And she goes, hey, I'm here. I stayed in the Wilderness Lodge. Here's the benefits of the Wilderness Lodge. It's close to the park, but it's a little far away from Epcot. I don't know. I'm just making this up. I don't know. Right. And the disadvantages to it are I was raped, you know, in the hall, but the breakfast is great and the characters come. I think one of the characters raped me. I don't know who. I think it was Goofy, but I don't want to start throwing barbs because the rooms were clean and checkout was efficient. Check in and checkout were efficient, but I was brutally attacked. So here's the thing. Replace friendship. Replace with YouTube. Replace friendship with people reviewing other things on YouTube. You don't need to ask people you barely know on a social network what their experiences were. You can just go to YouTube, and it's very efficient, and she'll take you through every fucking hotel. You don't need some fucking clown telling you, get away. It's fucking, there's these big bugs in this house, and one of our other retard friends was like, they kill the small bugs. So now that I see these big bugs, I don't even kill them. I say, hello, sir. And I just let them do what they do because literally someone, and there's no proof, and no one's ever looked this up.
No.
But someone went, no, they kill like a spider. Like, they kill the little bugs.
Right.
Which I've never seen. I only see the big bugs.
No, they say that about Daddy Long Legs.
Yeah, so I don't know what PR person the big bugs have. Probably Gary Vee. The big bugs have Gary Vee. You say to the big bug, you're like, I should kill you. And they're like, content is king. Why don't you stop whining and start hustling?
The I'm bug's like, hustling. Right.
I mean, so I don't know, man. I don't know. Maybe they'll buy this show. I think it's a funny show. I think it's a funny show, man.
I mean, if that's the pitch, I don't know how they can turn it down.
You know, but I think I got to stay. Somebody said to me today, they were like, stay online. And I think I got to stay online.
Yeah.
And that's the reality. I'm going to try. I really want to make cool shit. Yep. I don't just want to do stand-up. There's a lot of cool shit I want to make. There's a lot of cool shit out there. You know, a lot of bad shit. There's a lot of bad shit. Mm-hmm. But there's some diamonds in the rough. There's some shows that are good. You know, and I hope that, you know, I get the opportunity to maybe work on something. I don't know that I will, but, you know, I mean, these are the things that you hope.
Mm-hmm.
You hope. Mm-hmm. What are you, best case scenario for your life? If you could just say, I want to, because I'll tell you my perfect life. You go first.
My perfect life.
Your perfect life.
Just tons of money and being able to make what I want and have a nice snack room, you know. Sometimes with the industry
stuff.
What
do you mean a snack room?
That's all I don't even know why, you know.
That's what Michael Jackson called it, the snack room.
Like getting in the industry, get like a real show. If it's not good, the only thing cool about it is
where
the money.
Where would you live?
And
best case, where do you live? Where are you living?
I'd have a house in New Orleans, and then a house.
You have a house in New Orleans. Have you ever been to New Orleans?
Yeah, I like it a lot.
And where in New Orleans?
Like the French Quarter.
Ooh,
yeah,
the French Quarter.
Yeah.
Not a mansion in the Garden District.
Maybe the Garden District, and then wander over to the French Quarter. I just like that you could walk and drink and eat everything. And,
okay, so you want to live in New Orleans, so you could walk and drink. That's your perfect scenario. You want to live in the French Quarter of New Orleans. And step through vomit and hear jazz music every day. That's a great city because it's just decay and. I'm like, there's a dead guy in the street. People eating beignets, just dancing, smashing cymbals. I love that city. I love the Garden District. My perfect life. Was if I was a dictator of a small country, but a nuclear country. We'd have to have a nuclear arsenal.
Yeah.
And I'd like to be the dictator, and I'd like to run the state TV so that I was constantly putting out content, which is king.
Yeah.
And, you know, that would be my life, and I'd live in the palace of the country.
Yeah.
You know?
Would you put these people away, these Instagram people, you know?
I would make love with some of them. I would love to date an Instagram influencer, like one of these young, hot Vine stars. I would like to date them. Remember Brittany Murphy's boyfriend, who was a fat mess, and then they both ended up dead?
They both died, yeah.
That's what I want. Brittany Murphy was like this good-looking actress.
Yeah.
And she dated this fat monster.
I think they were both killed by her mom.
And God only knows what he said to keep her in that relationship. You know you're nothing without me, right? You know you'll never get another movie again if you don't let me crawl on top of you. Or like Kathy Griffin had a husband who just stole from her.
Oh, is that true?
For like 20 years. He just embezzled money from her. Nice. Great. Nice. That's great.
Yeah.
She said once on her show before she lost her mind, she said, she goes, you know, really scared me about Matt, who was her husband, who was stealing from her. But again, she wasn't like she was putting any emotion into the fight. She was chasing Andy Cohen around trying to get, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
She was fucking sleeping outside of her agency. That's all she cared about in life. So fucking then you don't get to have a happy marriage.
Right.
If every fucking minute is dedicated to attracting a fucking fan base, you know? Mm-hmm. If you want to get, you know, recognized all the time by strangers, the person that lives in your house is probably going to go in your pocketbook when you're asleep. She was like, you know, Matt, my husband said, he said to me, he goes, you know, if I went to jail, I'd do fine in jail. And she's like, jail didn't even scare him. I was like, he's in jail. In jail with you. He doesn't care about going to another jail. Right. He's stealing money. The poor guy's miserable because every fucking free minute that you have is dedicated to getting a photo op, going and photobombing a red carpet. Okay? Yeah. That's why he's, you know, and listen, you know, I don't know. I'd like to have her on the show. Me and her, we would have it out.
Oh, yeah. I think she'd do it.
She would not do it. None of them. Listen, I'd love Annie Jacobson to come on. Wrote a great book about DARPA called The Pentagon's Brain. She will not come on. A lot of people won't come on the show. And I've told those people, if I've ever said anything that has offended you, or if you don't feel like the show is prestigious enough, know that everything that I'm doing is being written in a room by Harvard-educated liberals who are concerned with global warming and racial justice and trans rights. And they write me. They write Tim Dillon. Tim Dillon's I'm a commodity that is being written by very sharp, smart people who figured it out.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Who understand that religions, other than Islam, are dumb. They're stupid. They're stupid, and the people that believe in them are stupid.
Yeah.
But Islam is a beautiful tradition of faith. But any other belief, and Scientology, those two are great.
Yeah.
But everything else is a waste of time.
Yeah.
Okay? What are you smiling at? Did you get pictures of Brittany Murphy's?
Oh, man.
Dude, that guy. That's a character Tom Segura has placed, you know? Great. How did they both die? Get that up before we get out of here.
A lot of people think the mom killed.
I got to do a few ad reads after this. Can you guys please buy the Bear Mountain maple syrup? Stop fucking around here. You stop fucking around and buy the Bear Mountain maple syrup and don't make a fucking fool out of me. Just order the maple fucking syrup. What do you give a shit? What do you give a shit? Do you want the show to continue? Get the maple syrup. Get the dick pills. Okay? I know it's not fucking audible. Okay? I know we're not, you know, it's not Intuit QuickBooks, help you do your accounting, Blue Apron, here's a little bag of spices, you can make a little fish and eat it with your fiance. No, it's none of that. It's dick pills and it's Bear Mountain maple syrup. Get it? And CBD. Go and get all the CBD products, please, the lube and the fucking, the oils and the lotions and the do it. Because it helps the show. If you think the show is entertaining,
get the maple syrup.
Buy the maple syrup. I don't know. There is a direct relationship between you buying the maple syrup and me continuing to do this show. Because this is the society that we live in. This is capitalism. I didn't make the rules. Fucking Antifa that thinks Meghan McCain's funny but then gets mad at me because you think I want to go knock off Venezuela. How about this? I will permit a genocide in Venezuela if you buy the maple syrup. I will stand idly by while Maduro makes soup out of his own people. I don't give a shit. I don't even like Venezuelan rest. I do like a rapist. But the point is... Buy the maple syrup, folks. Is it so fucking hard? You get a jug of maple syrup and you put it on shit.
Right.
What's your favorite? Pancakes, French toast, waffles.
Waffles.
Yeah. No, you're right. But the thing is, pancakes have an 80%. They're 80% good when you order them out. Waffles are 50%
good. Yeah. Lower success rate.
And French toast is like 20%. Mm-hmm. French toast is such a fucking throw it at the wall. Some French toast is amazing and it'll change your life, but most of it is just like literal bread. You ever go to a diner, they hand you literal bread for French toast? What did you get, Ben?
What are we looking at, Ben?
It was pneumonia, iron deficiency, anemia, and multiple prescription drug intoxication.
Sorry. Katie, are we being too loud? We'll be done in a few minutes. Okay. A cop just came in. So wait a minute. So they said the mother killed them?
Yeah. Yeah, it's there's a lot of legitimacy to it.
How did the mother kill? Wait, how did the mother kill them?
The father thinks that the mother killed them both because he died like 2 weeks later.
But so how? Ben just said what? Iron deficiency.
They think there's like mold in the house, and they both got the flu real weirdly.
You think
and
the mother fed them?
I'm just gonna run with it because it sounds better than them just dying.
Well, guess what? Good for the mother. Good for the mother. Yeah. Looking at those two wastes of life. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Good for her. All right, we're going to wrap up the episode. Devin Costa, very funny guy. People should go watch your YouTube videos. They're really funny. Your Instagram page is what?
Devin Trill Costa.
Your YouTube?
YouTube, Devin Costa, and check out my podcast, Hate That You Love It.
Hate that you love. Devin talks more on his podcast. You know?
Yeah.
Which is, but I think you talk enough here.
Yeah.
Okay. I think you have a good run.
Buy the maple syrup.
Ben, you want to plug your information?
Yeah, at Ben Avery is good on Instagram and Twitter. And I produced Devin's podcast too. We just launched that, so.
If you like the videos, Ben edits all the videos. If you don't like the videos, message Ben and tell Ben.
Yeah.
No, seriously. I don't want to take all these messages.
That's fine.
Message Ben if you don't like, or if you have ideas for things, right. Instead of messaging me, message Ben.
DM me.
Some guy said to me, he goes, I came up with a character for you called Cash, Crimes Against Sean Hannity.
Oh, yeah.
I don't even know what that means. But he goes, that's a character for you. I'm like, all right, bud. Thank you. TimDillonComedy.com. I have dates coming up. I'm at Laugh Boston in May. I'm at Dead Crow Comedy Club in North Carolina. I'm coming back to Mohegan Sun in Connecticut. It's one of my favorite rooms to do. I have dates in the fall or late summer, early fall. We're going to be at the Stress Factory in New Jersey. We're going to be at... in Providence at the Comedy Connection in Rhode Island. Moon Tower Comedy Festival. This is a big one. This is coming up soon in April, the 24th through the 27th. If you're getting a badge, you can get in. If not, I've posted everywhere on Instagram and Twitter. You can buy one event. And the one event you should buy, I'm doing a live podcast with Ron Bennington on the 25th of August, Thursday at Speakeasy in Austin, Texas at 6 p.m., Ron Bennington's a legendary broadcaster from Ron and Fez, and of course, Bennington on SiriusXM. He does Unmasked, where he interviews everybody. So get tickets to that if you can. I posted the link. I'll continue to do so. But if you're a comedy fan and you live in Austin, Texas, get a badge to Moon Tower and go fucking see everything, dude. Everybody's going to be down there. Everybody's going to be doing live podcasts, or at least a lot of people are. So if not, if you don't know how to get tickets, message me. I'll send you the link, but... you should be able to figure that out. Thursday, April 25th, 25th or 26th, but I have the date. Ron Bennington, we're doing an hour live. Tim Dillon's Going to Hell in Austin, Texas. Really, really fun. I'm really excited. I think I'm going to do a show with Andrew Schultz down there, too. I'm going to do some stand-up down there. I think I'm doing stand-up on Andrew's show. All other dates, timdillencomedy.com. Tim J. Dillon, DILLON on Instagram and Twitter. And then subscribe, please, if you can, go to, and I know it's annoying, go to iTunes. It's not annoying. Why am I saying that? It's not annoying. Go to iTunes, leave a 5-star rating, and review the show. Do you enjoy the show? Also, for the love of God, Christ Almighty, can you please buy the fucking maple syrup? Thank you.